Welcome to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm your host, Stephanie. Our podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Zogenix. Here on Energy in Action, we like to talk all things Mito, and our goal is to be informative and entertaining. Today's episode is definitely informative. I am speaking with the president of Rare Patient Voice, Wes Michael, and the patient outreach manager, Debbie Christ. The goal of Rare Patient Voice is to give patients the opportunity to have their voices be heard.
Today's episode of Energy in Action is definitely informative. I am speaking with the president of Rare Patient Voice, Wes Michael, and the patient outreach manager, Debbie Christ. Their goal is to give patients the opportunity to have their voices be heard. And I have to say, I was so excited when we were able to collaborate because I've been following Rare Patient Voice as a caregiver for my son, and excited to finally get to see kind of the behind the curtains on this, because we have completed some surveys and help researchers with his von Willebrand. So I am very excited to get to know more about you guys and on how we can bring this great effort to more people.
Excellent.
So I think this will be for you, Wes. Why don't you share with us the history and the story of how Rare Patient Voice came to be?
Sure. So I've been in market research for many years. That's asking people their opinions about, and this was about food and cereal and spices and things like that. But 20 some years ago, I started getting involved in healthcare research, and it was amazing to me how much patients and caregivers were so interested in sharing their stories and their opinions. And that also that the companies that are coming up with treatments and services were more and more interested in hearing from the patients. They always want to hear from physicians. And of course, that's important. But what about the people that use their products and their treatments and their drugs and things? So it struck me about that. But it also struck me that from a market researcher point of view, it's not always easy to find the patients. They're not just, especially rare patients, right? They're just, if you have a panel of a million people, you might have three people with hemophilia. I mean, it's just normal methods wouldn't work. So I kind of said, boy, wouldn't it be neat to provide more opportunities for the patients to provide their opinions? And then it would help the industry as well, because they want to hear from people. So that was in my head for many, many years. And I kept telling my wife, someday we're going to do this. And it all came together. Now it's almost 8 years ago where I said, let's do this. And I knew we started by going to patient events in person, the conferences, walks, educational symposiums. You know, all the advocacy groups had these wonderful events. So we would go there, set up our table and our signage and our clipboards and talk to people, because it's so great to explain what we do. And we could explain, hey, companies want your opinions, and it's confidential, and you'll get paid for them. Because we started at the beginning, we said, let's pay folks at the rate of $100 an hour, because people's opinions are worth it. And you know what? We don't get any pushback on that. So people realize, yes, let's compensate people for their time and their attention. So
definitely.
So we got started then. And then at first, as like a lot of small companies, it was just me. And I was going to patient events and doing a few things. Well, fortunately, we started getting a wonderful team of people like Debbie that could go out to events. And so people would go to events in their own area. We started this patient advocate team. And so over time, we've grown our panel to 100,000 people, mostly rare, but also non-rare diseases. Over time, people would say, hey, I have asthma or diabetes, can I join? And we didn't want to say no. But then clients would say, you don't happen to have asthma and diabetes. So we say no to no one. So we say, we're Rare Patient Voice, but we're also non-rare. Yeah.
Right. I like that, because sometimes rare patients have non-rare things as well. So I think it's awesome, you know, to include people.
That is so important. I found out that, I guess it's obvious to most people, but it was news to me. Unfortunately, most people don't just have one condition. The conditions tend to go travel in groups, and people, so many have more than one. We say, oh, please. It's unfortunate when obviously you have more than one, but take advantage, because you can do surveys in different categories if you're suffering from more than one condition.
Yeah, I definitely, we found you through Von Wildebrands. My son has mitochondrial disease. But somehow I found you because I was researching Von Wildebrands and some things I needed for him. And lo and behold, I was able to register and I have received several, you know, emails to invite me to participate in surveys. So I think it's a very simple process. And my son and I both enjoy sharing, you know, his answers to the questions. And, you know, it's very, it's a unique opportunity, like you said, to really let people know your story.
So, I mean, people tell us, and Debbie has a lot better things to say than I do, but people tell us they love being able to share their opinions. The money is nice, but that's usually not the main reason, but we feel so good to be able to provide it. And since we've started, we've been able to pay people over $6 million. So wow. It's like, we really feel good about that.
Wow. So Debbie, this might be more for you on the advocacy, patient advocacy route, but we know at MitoAction that hearing the stories of others really allows those of us who are just isolated and kind of on rare disease island, as I call it, it helps us to gain community by telling our story and having people interact with us and actually say, oh yeah, me too. So I believe that hearing brings hope. And so what are some of the goals of Rare Patient Voice to help find the families and the patients so they have the opportunity to share these stories and celebrate that hope?
Well, you're right. It is incredibly empowering to share. And you're also right. I have a son with Crohn's disease. So I'm his caregiver. And, you know, when you're first diagnosed and your first, you know, experience, I didn't know what Crohn's disease was, and you are isolated. So finding your people, you know, these groups, these advocacy groups, support groups of other moms, other parents, that was a lifeline for me. And being now, you know, it's been 6 years that he's been diagnosed, I can kind of give, you know, advice and support to these new moms and dads coming into, you know, this unfortunate diagnosis. So it is what Rare Patient gives is that voice, and we get to share and be part of the research. The, you know, our information, what we can bring to the table is so different than what the medical field can. And it's so important. And I love my job. I love to share that. And it's empowering, not just for the caregivers, but for the patients, but for my son, having him participate and kind of sitting back and listening to him. There's a lot of insight that I've gained, and it's empowering for him too. You kind of have a little more control. It's not, you know, I can't fix him. And that was really tough for me to grasp, because I'm his mom and I'm a fixer. So it, being able to contribute in the research was empowering to me and kind of fulfilled that. Okay. Can't fix him, but I can contribute. So my job is really to go out and find these advocacy groups, support groups, little kind of mom and pop nonprofits, and share Rare Patient Voice and allow them to share Rare Patient Voice with their members. And it's just grown from there. And like Wes said, it's fantastic that we compensate, but I hear every day, I would do this for nothing. That what I'm gaining and what I'm able to contribute, I do it for free, but boy, is it nice to get a check in the mail. Cause we all know in this realm, medical bills, you know, it all helps. It can all help. So
yes, it can. It can definitely ease the blow of a target run, right?
Right. Right.
And I liked how you said the word control, because so many families who are isolated by rare disease feel that sense of no control. It's like something came into their world and it's just now consuming everything. And by allowing people to have a voice and to say to them what matters,
and not being told what matters, but they have the ability to say what matters. It allows them to partner up and to feel, like you said, they are contributing to a process that will hopefully find treatments or eradicate the disease. And that is such a great feeling to know that you are now at the table. When you're given a voice, that puts you at the table. And I think for some patients, I know it happened to me, once I started speaking, it was like I had just word, it just wouldn't stop. I was just like a chatterbox about everything. Oh, it just felt so good. And so what are some of like your rare groups that you already are working with?
Well, we, right now, we have probably over 1,000, I would say, that range from large, you know, national foundations, to small, very rare, really small, online support groups. So it's a array of different groups and support groups. I've now with COVID, most of the outreach and connecting is online. So I've really tapped into the support groups, these little, mom and pop kind of nonprofits, just moms like us who said, hey, there's a need here, and start up their own little, you know, support group. And just those are the ones that I've been really tapping into, because I get to connect directly with the patients and caregivers. So it's right. The next best thing from not being able to meet them in person. This is, you know, the next best thing, really. Definitely. Being able to one-on-one get to the patients and the caregivers and share rare patient voice.
Yep. I call all of the social media accounts that I'm part of, it's just like this information exchange, and yes. I love it. And it could be very technical information, or it could be I post, oh my gosh, today had to be longer than 24 hours, you know, and you get a whole bunch of affirmations back on, you did it, sit down, go find a book, you know, things to remind us caregivers, you know, put your mask on, so to speak, take a deep breath. So you're definitely have the right angle on how you're finding everybody, because they are online, because we're all searching to be part of a community and,
right.
And to talk to people who know our language. And I think that's what's so important that Rare Patient Voice is doing, is that you are allowing people to speak in their language what they think, feel, and need about their rare disease, and what they want researchers, doctors, you know, pharmaceutical companies, what they need to know. Because like Wes and I, when we were talking earlier, you know, 20 years ago, they told me there was no hope for my son. There was no cure. There was no nothing, you know, basically gave me the good luck and shut the door. And that was devastating to hear as a mom, because like you said, us moms, we are wired to kiss it and make it better.
Right. Right.
That is how a parent is wired. And when you are told you can't do that, it's like your soul just goes dark. And finding ways now to have a voice and to have other companies say, what is it that you really need to improve quality of life, is so much better than saying, we are going to make your quality of life better because now you can clap your hands 3 times. Well, I don't want to clap my hands 3 times. I just, you know what I mean? It's like, don't tell me what you're going to do for me. Ask me how you can help me.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, we are the experts. I mean, nothing against the medical field, but living with this and caring for someone with a chronic illness, we have insight that the doctors have no idea about. So it's amazing that they are finally tapping in and going straight to the horse's mouth. And it's needed, and it's, like I said, it's empowering. There's nothing more empowering than being able to contribute when you can't fix it. It's incurable. I can't fix it, but I can be part of the solution, and hopefully someday there will be a cure, and I can say I contributed to that. My voice matters. I have important information to share.
Right. So how does Rare Patient Voice connect and get the surveys? Do you help ask the questions, or do you just leave it up to the people who are trying to gather the information to put appropriate questions on there and hopefully glean out some information that they want? Or is there a partnership with that? Or are you guys really the conduit of, we can get you the information, you just have to tell us what information you want?
Yes, that's a great question. We work with hundreds of different research firms.
Oh.
Who knew there were that? I was in the field for many years. I didn't know there were so many. 100. And they in turn work for pharmaceutical, biotech, and universities and such. Mm-hmm. But so they write up the questions. They write up or they have the moderators that do the interviews. So our job is really the matchmaker. We want to make sure they have the patients. And then it's out of our hands. It's kind of interesting. We don't hear any of the, we don't see the results. We know who completes it because we compensate them.
Right.
But we don't see their answers. Our clients don't know who the people are. They have everybody gets a ID code.
Right.
And they see the answers, but they don't know who the people are. So it's a great way to protect privacy.
Excellent.
But it's funny because people say, well, what are you learning about this category? Well, what I learn is when I'm at a patient event and I hear people talking, but directly from the surveys, we're blind to that. So it's,
okay.
We're doing all this work and we hear it secondhand. A patient's like, oh, that was so great. I learned, but we don't hear it directly. It's kind of funny.
Wow. I like though that you are the kind of the match.com for the research world. And we need that because I think especially within the last year, we have opened up a good Pandora's box on learning and exploring all the technology that's out there when they were developing the COVID-19 vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we have ignited a whole group of researchers of saying, I think we can take this to the next level, which is wonderful for the rare disease community, because now we really have some fire under people who are definitely thinking more and bigger. So what, now that you guys are kind of grounded and you're not traveling to different advocacy affairs or conferences, once we all get our, our doors open and we can get back out there, where do you plan to go? And like, what's your goal like for the next year? To how many groups you're going to meet? How many new groups or patient groups do you want to find? Have you thought about that?
Debbie and I can both talk about that. I mean, first of all, we're waiting because so many of the events, they're still virtual. So we'll go to various virtual events, but we're still waiting for folks to say when, for the most part, when things are open. And then we're always like, when things were open a couple of years ago, we went to over 300 and some events in the year. So thank goodness for our team of people.
Wow. That's like one a day.
Yeah. So, but what it was, you know, typically it's on a weekend. So our team would be out on a weekend and I would go to one in my local area and Debbie and her team. And so we would cover these events. And, you know, most of the events are in the spring and the fall, the outdoor, when the weather's nice. So it's a very busy season. So, so we're looking forward to that. But Debbie can talk more about where we get requests across so many different, conditions and disease areas. Debbie's always saying, hey, can you add this as a disease? Because we'll have it in the category called other. And she'll say, we have five people or we have a demand. And we're now, the last number I saw, Debbie, was 563 different disease
yes.
conditions.
Wow. That's right.
Some of which we might have five people, some of which we might have 5,000 people, you know, depending. So
that is amazing. Is this all, are all of your participants US-based or are you global?
That's a great question.
Yeah, do you want to?
Yeah, so we've just expanded and it's fantastic because for so long I would get, I'm in Australia, I'm in Germany, I'm in the UK, can I participate? And it was always a not yet, but we have expanded and we're in the UK, we're in Canada,
ooh,
Germany, France, Italy, Spain. Am I missing anything?
No,
I think I got them all.
That's where we've started to get.
Wow, excellent choices.
Yeah, so anyone from anywhere can sign up.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. But as far as our projects and, you know, being able to participate, we're focusing on those countries right now. But who knows what's to come? It's very exciting. So a study comes in and we may not have enough people or the right, exactly what they're looking for, maybe a certain age range or whatnot. So that's when I go out and it gives me an opportunity to find new groups in that category, in that disease category, and engage and bring them on board and share Rare Patient Voice. So that's my daily job. And that's, you know, I get to
How meet- exciting though.
It is. It's not work, you know, I get to do this every day. So,
well, and you also help so many people as they're trying to sign up, if they have a question or they, you know, that are saying, how do I sign up or where do I sign up? So she's always, or they've put their information in and we can't understand it. So Debbie's always going through all that too.
So yes, a lot of questions, because right now we are looking for certain patient groups just for MitoAction's benefit to learn more about diseases, right? And we're looking for disease groups within Mito because there's an absolute array of them and more popping up all the time. So one question we always get is, well, what are you going to do with my data, or what's the privacy? So how does that work for you and the de-identification piece?
Well, I'll start with that. So as I said before, everybody has a unique ID. It's all these numbers and letters strung together. And so that's what we use. I mean, we know the person's name simply because we want to compensate them and such, but that's how it's done. And we, you know, there's all these HIPAA compliant rules, and we're happy to comply with all that because we don't want anybody's data to be used or gotten anywhere. So we're right. Very careful. We don't send things in an email. It's all these share file documents and things like that. So we protect all the people's information. Typically what happens is when we get a request for a study and it looks like we can help a client, so we'll write an email out and we'll send an email to the appropriate people, you know, people with that condition that have told us they're interested in, or the subtype, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And that'll explain it. We always try to make it very clear with bullets, like how long is it? What is it? Is it a phone interview? Is it an online survey? And what's the compensation? Is it $100? So people can glance and say, I'm busy this week, or, oh, this sounds like something I'd love to do. Mm-hmm. And then they click on a link. And then usually there's a few questions to see if they qualify. And then if it's a survey, they can do a survey. Hopefully they make it work on the phone. We keep playing, make it easy for people. If it's an interview, they might schedule a time for a phone or webcam and that kind of a thing. And then they complete that. And then we work with the client to say, oh, this is completed. And every week we send out a huge pile of checks through a check processing company. Well, that's just great news because it's like, you know, make people's week. So we like to get them out as quickly as possible as soon as the studies are completed.
So I'm sure that because you're finding good quality survey respondees, you have companies that are just coming back like, again, like, okay, we found out this information, but we need to know more. Are you able to reconnect them with that same survey group and say they want to ask a few more in-depth questions, or do you just start all over and send it out to the whole group?
That's a good point. That's why it's so useful with our ID codes, because a client can say, say they've done telephone interviews with 10 people. They can say, we really liked respondent, you know, 1, 2, 3, or they might want to ask them all additional ones, but we know who that respondent was, and we can say, hey, if you're interested, they have follow-up questions. So yeah, so often you're right. Cause you ask a question, you get an answer. Usually that just begets more questions, right?
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes they want to do a completely different study, but other times they're interested in getting it from the same people. So we accommodate it, but it's totally up to the patient. If they're not interested in doing it, you know, it's voluntary. We're not going to force anybody to do anything. It's the ball's in their court. They can just.
Right. Well, so that's great. Cause I was thinking how that might disrupt the data, where you would send out the additional information request to same or similar group of people, maybe a few new add-ins, and that could really disrupt the data chain that has already been started on their research. So that's awesome that they can come back to you and say, we want to ask a few more questions or whatever, and you can regroup everybody and keep the data integrity there, which is
without revealing, you know, people's privacy. So.
Wow. Okay. So I'm on your website right now and I'm on the four patients, and I have to say the sign up is so easy. A, there's a nice big orangish yellow box that says click here. And then you just get walked through some very basic, simple demographical type information, which I think is awesome. And Debbie, I see all the flags, which I love, all the countries.
Right?
Oh my gosh. Love that. Hey, that was good thinking. So people already know that they're included just by seeing that. That's a great visual identifier. And then from there, you just pick, you know, what category you go into, you know, patient, caregiver, patient, you know, whatever. That is just, it's so simple. I can't understand why more people wouldn't want to take advantage of this opportunity. Just
one of the things that we were able to put in and make it a little simpler for people too is when you get to that question about what disease or condition you have, we used to have people type it in from scratch, and then, you know, people would type the same thing a lot of different ways. I have hemophilia. I have severe hemophilia. You know, they might. But now, if you start typing, I'll use that example, HEM, a whole lot of words will drop that way. But and you can just click on it. And one, you don't have to, because a lot of people, these are long words and how to spell them. Yeah. And two, it helps us, because all of a sudden, if it's in there the same way, it's a lot less cleaning of the data that we have.
Data integrity right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I for whatever reason, struggle with hypoplasia. I don't know why, but that's a word that you'd think I would get to know by now, but I don't. So anyway, so that's great. I love that you have like those cheat dropdowns, because that does make it easier. And so then people are more inclined to keep going. What about the ultra rare, like truly the ultra rare that we all know are out there?
Yeah.
Do you have a spot where they can type in like, okay, you really don't have me on here. So, you know, can they type in other or no?
Yes. Yes. And that's what I love that, because if you don't see your condition, there's a little box and you can type in whatever you can write a paragraph. And we go through each and every one and we read through it and we identify and we will make sure all the data is in the correct place. So when we do have a project, we'll be able to find them. But yeah, so if you don't want to go through, you know, and click the boxes, very easy, just type everything out and it'll be done for you.
Wow. Okay.
Debbie will often find some of these folks with very rare, and she'll say, "Hey, look, we have three or four of these now. Let's put them on the list."
Right.
And so I call it like graduating. They've graduated from other to on the list. So we'll say, sure, and we'll put them there so that next time somebody has that, they start to, it'll be on the list. So proud to get enough people, you know, to add them to the list.
As a rare mom, I appreciate that, because when you find your disease in the dropdown, you immediately get a sense that you're not alone and somebody has at least heard of it.
Yep.
That, I love that. And you're absolutely right.
So that is so reassuring. You already feel like you have found your blanket fort of people. So yeah. I think that's great. I like that you have a criteria. Good job, Debbie, for keeping people getting specified. I like that.
Thank you. Yes, I'm always sending Wes a list. Another list. Let's do this.
Adam.
So do you have someone who's just strictly programming your behind the scenes, you know, getting everybody in, updating things, or how is that managed for you? Or is that you, Wes? Are you the guru?
No, but God forbid. Now, when we first started, it was me and a bunch of spreadsheets, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can imagine.
Yep.
So there's several different ways we do it. One, we have a terrific company we work with. It's called Q1. That's a database company. It's a specifically, it focuses in market research databases. Mm-hmm. So they're the ones that get the loop working to say, are you a patient or a caregiver, that kind of thing. And we're always asking them to make improvements and changes and things to help. And then on our end, while Debbie works with a team of folks to constantly go through and see how things are and make suggestions to improve it, And then for the surveys itself, there's programming to be done, and the clients do some, and then we have a programming team that'll work and do some of those, or some of our project managers, sort of simple ones, when it's two or three questions, they can do it. Mm-hmm. I used to be able to do it. So it passed me by. We've gotten technology. We've gotten better stuff that I don't know how to use. So.
Yeah. About four revisions ago on my resume, I could spout that I could code in SQL, and now, no.
Yeah, right, and, right. Yeah. Leave it to the experts.
I'm sure there are third graders who could do it better than me. So one thing I want to ask, because it's been a kind of a good thing that came out of COVID, is telehealth medicine. Yeah. Has that been a growing yay or nay for you? Does it allow more people to participate because you can do things more via the computer?
Certainly, it's helped us. Phone? I mean, if you think about some people that they want to do a phone interview with a few people with a rare disease, even before COVID, where they're like, let's do it via phone or webcam or something, because they'll say, can we find them in Chicago and Milwaukee? It's like, well, the number, it's just very difficult with a rare population to have them in. So this has made people much more open to say, wait a minute, let's look across the whole country, because we'll do it by Zoom, we'll do it by phone, we'll do it by, so that they've kind of come to where we wanted to be to begin with, you know?
Right. Definitely so, allows more people to participate, I think, because there aren't any barriers.
Exactly. For logistics. Exactly. And even those who are living in remote areas, even pre-COVID, mm-hmm. It's like, you know, why shouldn't their voice be heard? If I'm in the middle of Montana or something, I'm just as important as somebody in the middle of New York City. So
exactly. That's a good point. And one thing we've heard from our researchers and physicians that they love telehealth for is that their patients aren't stressed out from traveling. And so they get to actually see their patients in their home environment. They haven't had to get on a plane or, right. You know, all of that. And so they can have a more productive meeting. People are definitely more relaxed in their home. They're not tired from all the travel and the worry and, you know, all that anxiety that comes with it. So I would imagine that people are probably more forthcoming and have more engagement.
Well, especially some people with rare diseases that often have to travel hours to see a specialist.
Yep. Yeah.
It's like we did a study ourselves about telehealth, and it was very interesting because some people said, I've been looking for this all along. So some people with anxiety, they really didn't want to be out in public and such. People with like Crohn's and colitis, they're like, I need to be near a bathroom or something. Right. And then people with various conditions, like, please, this I needed this all along. Or people with disabilities, it's hard to travel and park and walk. And you know how it is in the business center. So it's nice to finally accommodate them, because everybody found themselves in the same boat.
Yeah, it was sort of an equalizer in some ways. And I hope that our congressional leaders are looking at expanding or extending the Emergency Use Act for it, because I have yet to find anybody who has said, oh, it's made my practice worse. You know, my patient engagement is way down. You know, everybody is delighted with how that has become a good thing out of it. So I hope we're all speaking to our congressional leaders to get that extended.
Yeah, good point.
So thinking back now, like, what's coming up for Rare Voice? Like, what do you guys got in the hopper for our listeners?
Debbie, what do we have? Well, as Debbie said, we're now we're accepting people from all around the world.
Yes, that's huge. That is huge. Everyone is eligible to sign up. Now, there might not be projects right away in some areas of the world, but everyone is eligible to sign up. We just want to get the word out and continue to share Rare Patient Voice, continue to add to our database, and continue to offer these opportunities to every condition out there, every small group, every demographic. So that's my goal here for next year, is to just continue to grow the outreach and to continue to share Rare Patient Voice and expanding, you know, throughout the whole world is a huge part of that.
I mean, one of the things that's new for us is, as I said, we send an email, invite people to studies, but now we're also sending out newsletters because patients said, I'd love to know more what's going on or what's happening. And so every couple of weeks or so, we'll send out a newsletter with just some information that we have, and then maybe some of the studies that we have going on, especially in some of the harder to you know, complete areas. And so people were excited to, you know, be able to get that kind of information, learn more about what we're doing. So we're happy to share it.
On your newsletter, I like the patient corner piece of it. Reading what people have contributed, their comments.
Oh, I love
just,
that. Yeah.
I just love that because, again, I find my people there. You know, you can read the joy and how people have, you know, felt just so forgotten. And now they're like, oh, I do matter. So I think that is like what you truly are giving to the rare disease community is that opportunity to feel validated, because so many in the rare disease world feel unvalidated.
We have a company-wide meeting once a month. Of course, it's over the phone and Zoom and stuff. And that's one of the things we always go through. Debbie pulls all the comments because after every study, we give the patient, anybody who participated, all the patients and caregivers, hey, tell us how did it work for you? But what I really like is an open net. And so many of them will put comments in. So we go through each one of those because it's so important. And I especially, thank God, most of them are so positive and helpful. And we love that. But I love the critiques too, because how else can we improve? Sometimes it's about maybe our client could have made a survey work better or something. So it was like, and usually when we get those, Debbie and her, they pounce right on it. Well, let's get to the client and tell them they need to fix this.
Yeah.
But we want to make sure that everything's working, but I love to hear what everybody says about the studies and their feedback, because, you know, that's the, again, back, it's the voice of the patient. Those are the real people that are telling us what they think.
Right. It is. It's nice that they can have that kind of put the bow on it for their survey. You know, I did it. Here's what I thought of it. I want to do it again, or make that a drop down.
Yeah, exactly.
Make that a drop down. So, all righty. So now we're kind of to a different point of our interview, and it's something that I like to call rapid fire. I'm just going to ask you some easy, fun questions, and you can just answer them however you want. The first one is what's your favorite book?
Oh my goodness. Debbie, you go first.
Oh my gosh. I am at a loss.
Okay, favorite author.
Colleen Hoover. I'm a romance reader. I love her. But right now I'm reading, actually, it's Breaking the Vicious Cycle, and it's a diet-based theory on how to treat Crohn's disease.
Oh, nice.
So it's very interesting. That's what I'm reading right now, and I'm really into it, but that's not, you know, it's more research than pleasure, but
it's applicable research for you. So that's a good thing.
True. Exactly. And I found a group through reading this book that actually has thousands of members and whatnot. So it was a win-win.
That is a win-win. All right, Wes, have you come up with an answer?
Yeah, well, I love to read biographies. I just finished this 1,000, I tend to read 5 or 10 pages a night before I go to bed, so it can take me a long time. So I feel like I'm living along with the person. But I just finished this 1,000-page biography of Winston Churchill that was really good by William Manchester. And that wasn't even the whole life. That was like just a part of you know, through World War II and at the end of his life. And I felt like I lived every day of life through the war. And then another one that was really good that I read over the past few years is Edmund Morris. He did biographies of Teddy Roosevelt, you know,
yeah.
And he had several of them, young, when he was president, and then afterwards. And I felt like I was living every day along with him. So those come to the top of my list.
I just recently read a book, and then I recommended it to my husband because I found it so fascinating. It's called Five Presidents, And it's a biography or an autobiography of a Secret Service who started with the Eisenhowers all the way through on his protection and what it was like and just how strenuous that is to be on that detail. And yeah, sometimes he wasn't even with the president. He was, you know, with the mother-in-law or the first lady or something. But yeah. Still, you know, it was, again, we both were like, oh my gosh, I felt like I was really on that airplane, the descriptive and, you know, the conversations that were had. It's really good. I found myself looking up a lot of pictures that he was talking about as I was reading. So
yeah, I'll have to look at all.
Yeah, definitely.
So what item are you brand loyal to? Like, I would never buy anything but Heinz ketchup. I would walk out of the store if they didn't have Heinz ketchup.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm a Pepsi girl.
Oh, amen.
I Coke is never in the house, even though the rest of the family might like it, but I'm very loyal to Pepsi.
Mm-hmm. I'm a peanut butter aholic, and actually I have, from time to time I stop it because I can't stop myself. So it hasn't been in the house for several weeks, so it's like I force myself not. But I love Jif.
Yes. Choosy mothers choose Jif.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, somebody asked me once and I replied with their slogan. It's like, tastes more like fresh peanuts or something.
Yeah, that is true. I'm glad to hear that you like just good basic peanut butter, because my kids keep trying to make me try like almond butter, sunflower butter, and all these other things that probably shouldn't be butter. And I'm like, can we just stick to peanut butter? It's a good classic. Children have survived on it for years. Why ruin it? So, yeah. Although I do like the cookie butter. That one I can do. Yeah.
Yeah.
If I took a picture of you on an ordinary day where you were just feeling fabulous joy and so just content, what would that picture look like?
For me, it would be with my dogs, probably. And I probably shouldn't say that because I should say with my children, but they're my children, my two pups. So probably, in the pool with the dogs, with my two labs.
Oh, they get to go in the pool. How fun is that?
They are. Yes. Sometimes it's not fun when they jump in and then run through the house, but, it's nice. So yeah. That would be my special time.
I like that.
I have a 20-month-old grandson, and he is just, you know, and it's one thing when you're their grandchildren, you don't have the same worries or frets or something. So, it's just a joy to have him. He runs around, he's doing all that stuff now. So what could be better, you know?
I'm with you. I have a 3-week-old grandson right now.
And oh, my God.
He is just the absolute pitter to my patter. I mean, I just cannot, I cannot get enough of him. And yeah, I never understood it when people were like, oh, you're just going to love being a grandma. And I was like, okay. And now it's like, oh my gosh.
So, I'm jealous. I can't wait. I mean, I can wait, but I'm looking forward to those days.
Yes. It's very exciting, Debbie. You will love it because it's so wonderful to see your child doing such great things because you can see it in the baby, right? You can see all the goodness and the care, and it's like watching your adult children, you know, excel at something brand new that they've never been able to try before either. It's not like you can do an internship on parenting. So
yeah. right, unfortunately.
Yeah. Although some people might think babysitting would be, but I don't know.
Not quite the same.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for taking time to be on our podcast today. I have really enjoyed our conversation, and I can hardly wait to get this information out to our community and get more FAOD patients engaged and mitochondrial disease patients engaged. Yeah. Because we know that the researchers are looking for us, and we've tried waving flags and they don't see us. So maybe this way we'll get to connect. So I'm very happy about that.
Absolutely. And make sure to send us, because we want to share it as much as widely as we can too.
You know? Okay. Oh, I definitely will. Yeah, we will.
Yes,
definitely
please do.
Keep you linked in.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. Thank you and have a great night.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so, so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
It was wonderful. Bye-bye.
It was fun. Bye, Debbie. Bye, Wes.
Bye. See ya.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I enjoyed my conversation with the team at Rare Patient Voice. Remember to check them out at rarepatientvoice.com to learn more about the topics that we discussed. They offer a much-needed resource for patients and caregivers to share their voices to improve our medical services. And who knows more about your life and your experiences than you? Remember, give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This show was brought to you by Zogenics. Be sure to join next week for more All Things Mito. This is your host, Stephanie. Have a great week.